Welcome to Parents' Perspective. Marilyn couldn't bear to visit another toy store. They all seemed to be filled with baby goods and mothers with infants. It was bad enough that her 4-year-old was constantly invited to birthday parties, so she was always dropping into these places to pick up an extra gift. But these days, just seeing babies was too painful, since somehow that second pregnancy she had counted on just wouldn't occur. She and her husband had been through all sorts of tests, yet no one had any answers. And even worse were the well-meaning friends who said, "Well, at least you do already have a lovely daughter." Marilyn was beginning to wish she could just sleep through the next few years and wake up when this painful time was over with a healthy new baby by her side. From a parent's perspective, what should we know about this common condition called secondary infertility? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. We're fortunate to have an expert with us today. Dr. Keith Blauer is director of the Infertility Division of the Genetics and IVF Institute in Fairfax, Virginia. An obstetrician-gynecologist, he specializes in reproductive endocrinology. And Dr. Blauer is the father of 6 children, ages 9 to 23, and will soon become a grandfather. Welcome to Parents' Perspective, Dr. Blauer.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity to join you today.
What is secondary infertility?
Infertility is usually defined as the inability to conceive or to have another child after attempting pregnancy or having unprotected intercourse for approximately 12 months. Now, this can vary depending on the age of the patient, but I think that that's a good guideline. And the term secondary refers to the fact that the woman has had a child previously. So it would typically be thought of in a situation where the woman has a child or maybe several children and then finds herself in the surprising situation where she's unable to conceive again.
Now, with couples in this kind of situation, when is the right time to actually get themselves to a doctor's office and go, "Oh, no"?
That's a very important question. Certainly when the woman has regular menstrual cycles and otherwise does not have any significant medical problems, we would typically recommend that after a period of 12 months of unprotected intercourse. If the woman is older, certainly over the age of 40 and probably over the age of 35, we would suggest that they consider seeing a physician after 6 months of unable to conceive.
I think I'd want to go after 2 months. I'd be so nervous and so worried.
Well, I think the thing that's important here is also to understand some basic physiology. Many people don't realize that what I would consider relatively low conception rates, even in a normal situation where the couple is young, in their 20s, for instance, if a couple has intercourse at the right time, pregnancy rates are still probably only 20 to at best 30% per cycle. And as you get into your 30s, it's probably more in the 10 to 15%. And so it often takes several months to conceive, and many couples don't realize the length of time that this can take.
That gives people sort of a better perspective, I think, because everyone probably thinks, "Oh, well, immediately this is going to happen."
Especially when they've had children before, many of them perhaps even conceived unexpectedly or within the first 1 or 2 months of trying, and they expect that to happen on the second attempt or with future attempts at pregnancy.
Doesn't always, does it?
No, I'm afraid it doesn't, but that's why we're there to try to help them.
What are some of the causes of secondary infertility?
It's interesting. Our patient population, we tend to see a little older patient, average age of about 37 or 38. And in many cases, it may be age-related. I think that that's one of the messages that I think is very important here, is that many women think that they may be able to have children into their mid-40s. And while that happens, by the time women reach 40, about 30% are unable to conceive, or if they do conceive, they have a very high likelihood of having a miscarriage. Even at the age of 35, probably as many as 5 to 10% can have a difficult time conceiving, just related to age. In addition, many things can happen in the intervening years between having children. abnormalities of the uterus can occur, such as fibroids, which are smooth muscle tumors that can grow into the uterine cavity or inside the womb. They can develop polyps, which are growths from the lining of the uterus that can irritate the inside of the uterus and decrease the chance of pregnancy occurring. So there are various factors that can affect this. In addition, oftentimes these are second marriages. In our modern society, second marriages are common. Sometimes either the wife or the husband has had a sterilization procedure during the previous marriage. And so those are issues that have to be taken into account. And luckily, we have technology now that can oftentimes help in each of these circumstances.
Have any specific birth control methods been found to contribute more than others?
I think the major cause for concern in the past has been with the use of an IUD or an intrauterine device. That's a device that's put inside the uterus that prevents implantation or perhaps also prevents fertilization, but there was an association with increased risk of infection that can affect the fallopian tubes with certain types of the IUD. That has become a much less common contraceptive device, and there are those devices on the market, and I believe that they're very safe in the right circumstance, but that has been the one that has been identified as possibly contributing in certain circumstances.
Can you clarify a little bit, why is age an issue for women?
That's a very important point from a physiology standpoint. When sperm is produced, it usually takes somewhere between 70 and 90 days, and you're producing new sperm all the time. In the woman, however, when they're producing eggs, a woman is born with all the eggs that she'll ever have. When a woman goes through puberty, the brain starts to release a hormone called FSH, or follicle stimulating hormone. That hormone then stimulates the eggs that have been there since birth to release. And the more sensitive eggs are probably released first. So as a woman ages, the less sensitive eggs are left. The brain tries to compensate for that by increasing the FSH levels. And so we can get a reasonable indication of the sensitivity of the eggs that are left in the ovary by measuring this hormone called FSH, or follicle stimulating hormone. And regretfully, some women's eggs age, so to speak, sooner than others, and it's oftentimes not very predictable. While there are certainly women that can have children in their mid-40s, that is the less likely scenario, and it's a very frustrating and disappointing situation where we have women in 35 or sometimes even in the early 30s that come in with elevated FSH levels, relatively low chance for success using their own eggs. Obviously, with new technology, there are alternatives such as the use of donor egg or adoption, but that's oftentimes not what many of these patients are expecting or anticipating when they seek assistance.
Is it possible that the elevated FSH hormone level then does get the egg to come out? I mean, in other words, if it's there, is that an indication that, oh dear, we've got serious trouble, or maybe now things are going to work a little better?
That's a very important question, and I think one of the problems or concerns that I have is that many times women that are in their late 30s will continue to have regular menstrual cycles and perhaps even have evidence of ovulation based on various tests that we can do, such as urinary ovulation predictor kits that you can buy over the counter, or with simple temperature monitoring such as basal body temperatures. However, even if the ovary is releasing an egg and there is evidence of ovulation, oftentimes the quality of the egg is decreasing, so there is a increasing risk of miscarriage as the woman ages. It gets into the 20 to 30% in the mid-30s and as high as 50% over the age of 40. So even if an egg is being released, it's often not of the quality that we might hope for. And if miscarriage doesn't occur, there's also an increased incidence of genetic abnormalities. Now, luckily, with modern technology, we have very good physicians in this country that can do prenatal testing and help determine abnormalities that might have occurred. But it is an issue that couples, especially with secondary infertility, typically tend to be older, need to be aware of and to contemplate as they look at their reproductive options.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion on secondary infertility.
The excellent new book, Parents as Mentors, by hosts Sandra Burt and Linda Perlis, is a practical guide to bringing out the abilities in your child. Parents as Mentors is available at all bookstores.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. Today we're talking with Dr. Keith Blauer about secondary infertility. What kind of a doctor should the couple see when they decide we better get ourselves to a doctor? And what does the doctor do, the mysterious stuff that goes on when you go in?
I think the physician to see is dependent somewhat on the patient and the relationship they have with their physician. Certainly there are many obstetrician gynecologists in this country with extensive experience with infertility. But certainly as you start thinking seriously about infertility and problems with infertility, we would tend to recommend that the patient see someone who spends at least 30 to 50% of their time taking care of infertility problems or seeing a reproductive endocrinologist who specializes in infertility, and they're becoming much more available in various cities around the country. And infertility has really become very readily available with many techniques that can help couples. Now, I think that many physicians are very good at some of the basic tests and basic discussions. I think the physiology discussion that we had, many obstetrician gynecologists would have with the couple and would start with some basic tests. When we think about infertility, there are several different causes that we think about in broad categories. Obviously, you've got factors on the male side with possible semen or sperm abnormalities. And then we have problems on the woman's side. Typically, they would be divided into categories such as problems with the fallopian tubes, such as scar tissue or blockage, problems with the ovary, where they might have decreased ovarian function, possibly related to age, or other hormonal issues that can be related to the pituitary, which is a gland in the brain, or abnormalities inside the uterus. And so we have tests that can be specifically targeted to look at each of these various areas that may be causing infertility.
So the husband and wife or two partners should go together to the same doctor at the beginning or no?
We strongly encourage they both come in together. I mean, infertility is a couple affair. It takes both of them. And I think that that's one of the surprising things is many women who have conceived easily before may have some factors related to their new partner or vice versa. So we don't insist, but we strongly encourage couples to seek out care together. And obviously both of them would need to be evaluated.
So you would start with going to your OBGYN and ask for a referral if you need to go to a more specialized person?
Most patients would start by seeing their primary physician, whether that's a family practice physician or an obstetrician gynecologist, making them aware of their infertility problem, trying to ascertain that particular physician's interest in the field, and then possibly asking for a referral if that's necessary to see an infertility specialist such as we've described.
What kinds of emotional issues do such couples face? They're already parents, and in contrast with the concerns of those who may be having infertility problems who are not yet parents, they're dealing with a child or children.
I think probably the biggest issue that they deal with to start with is surprise. They don't expect it to be a problem. They expect to conceive easily and quickly, and when they don't, they're very surprised and not sure what to do next. One of the advantages we have with secondary infertility is we at least know that the underlying anatomical findings are there. For instance, if they've had a child before, we know they have a uterus, we know that they have ovaries, we know that the pituitary is working, which with primary infertility, there are problems associated with each of those areas that may not be the case, so that we at least have some basic understanding of their anatomical parts, so to speak, and we know that it functioned before. The question is, what's changed?
Can changes, by the way, be evident in males as well, or is this the aging thing is the female's part?
The primary issue with age relates to women because they're born with all the eggs that they have. Men continue to produce new sperm throughout their life, and so it's less of an issue in the man.
Not fair, but true. Huh?
Correct. I was in the U.S. Air Force at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, after my subspecialty training. The setting there is I had the opportunity to perform tubal anastomosis or tubal reversal procedures from people from around the world where they had had a sterilization procedure, and with microsurgical techniques, I could put the fallopian tube back together. To put it in perspective, the fallopian tube's about the size of a pencil, and the inside of the fallopian tube's about the size of a pencil lead. So you need to use very fine suture and microscope to do that. And so usually I would do one or two cases a week, and I still receive many Christmas cards even today from patients around the world that where I was able to do a tubal anastomosis and help them to conceive. With our modern technology and improvements in pregnancy rate, many times we'll use as an alternative today in vitro fertilization, but both of these are good techniques for helping couples in this particular situation where sterilization occurred to have a child. One of the exciting areas and new developments that we've been involved with in the last 5 or 6 years has really been helping men with low sperm counts. Technology was developed in the mid-90s where we can take a single sperm and inject that sperm into the egg. It's called ICSI, intracytoplasmic sperm injection. And so we can take men who before would never have been able to have children without the use of donor egg or adoption and help them conceive using their own sperm. And so that's a wonderful technique. And in addition, since that's been developed, we now have a technology where men that have had a vasectomy, as an alternative to a surgical procedure, the woman can go through in vitro fertilization where we would give her medications, retrieve the eggs, and with a very tiny small needle, we can do what's called non-surgical sperm aspiration, aspirating a very small portion of tissue that we can then tease apart under the microscope, pick up a single sperm, inject that into the egg, watch under the microscope as these embryos grow and develop, and then, of course, transfer them back into the uterus. It's a very exciting technology.
That's miraculous.
Wonderful. What's the percentage of success with things like that?
Well, it's interesting. You can define success in various ways. One way is the ability to just obtain fertilization, and when you use intracytoplasmic sperm injection, or ICSI, which is this technique of injecting the sperm from testicular sperm, you can usually achieve fertilization about 50 to 60% of the time. Now, obviously, then the next question, and the one that's important to the patient, is, well, what are my chances of conceiving? And that becomes much more difficult. Your chance of conceiving is based oftentimes on the age of the woman, and so someone who's in their mid-20s is going to have a much higher implantation rate from an embryo than someone, let's say, in their 40s. And then also it depends on how many embryos are transferred, whether you transfer one or you transfer three. So pregnancy rates can range from 20% to 60 or 70% depending on how many embryos are transferred, when they're transferred, and the age of the woman.
A lot of gambling there.
Well, I don't like to use the word gambling, but it doesn't always work. But the exciting part is that we can take a couple where they have no chance of pregnancy because of the sterilization procedure and give them a 30 to 50 or better chance. So if I wouldn't call that gambling. I would call that a good chance for success.
What suggestions do you have for parents while they're going through this, dealing with their only child's requests for siblings? So why can't I have a sister or brother? Where is he?
I think that can be very difficult for couples, especially the woman, as the child may ask, you know, mother, are you going to have another child? And people take various approaches. Some people prefer not to talk about therapy they may already be undergoing for fear that they may disappoint the child if it's unsuccessful. I've had other couples that have become very involved and let their child be involved, depending on the age of the child, sometimes with even some of the discussions or even some of the procedures that are done. So I think the important thing is that you have to individualize. You have to be open and discuss these things, you know, with your children. Probably more important is the issue of communication between the husband and wife. Oftentimes, infertility can be one of the most difficult things that they face and one of their really first true life crises. And it can be very difficult. And oftentimes, men deal with this differently than women, and they need to talk about it. Sometimes the man can plan on special surprises when you're having a pregnancy test and you're afraid that it might be negative. Perhaps you can plan other activities that could be done, you know, if it's not successful. But these are difficult issues and things that a couple really have to talk about. And oftentimes counseling can be very helpful. And we've got some very good counselors in this area as well as other areas of the country.
Are there ones that specialize in this kind of counseling?
There are.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion on secondary infertility.
For an audio cassette copy of Any Parent's Perspective show, send a check or money order for $5 with your name, address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C., 20015.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. Today we are talking with Dr. Keith Blauer about secondary infertility.
What suggestions can you make for day-to-day living for couples undergoing treatments for secondary infertility? I can imagine this takes up a great deal of time and energy.
One of the things I think that we forget when we talk about infertility therapy is that many of the treatments can be relatively simple, such as fertility medications that they take by mouth, monitoring so that they have appropriate timing for intercourse, sometimes a little more advanced, such as intrauterine insemination. It's really only about 5% of the couples that need to utilize the very intensive therapy that we refer to as ART, or assisted reproductive technology, such as in vitro fertilization. That is much more time intensive, requires oftentimes daily monitoring, or certainly 5 or 6 days of monitoring over a 2-week time frame.
Well, how long would you say a couple should continue to try these kinds of treatments, the treatments that you're discussing and suggesting, before they start investigating other options for bringing a child into their family?
Every case is individual and it can be different. For instance, if we do a surgical procedure to remove a fibroid, we would usually wait for 1 or 2 years of trying to see if they can then conceive if everything else is normal. In a situation where perhaps we have unexplained infertility, we do evaluations such as a hysterosalpingogram, which is an X-ray study looking at the inside of the uterus and the tubes. We do ovulation tests such as a blood test called serum progesterone, or ovulation predictor kits. In addition, we've done a very careful semen analysis where we've looked at the count and the motility, or I should say the concentration and the motility, as well as the fertilization capability. When we've looked at these things carefully and we don't have a good explanation for why they haven't conceived, we may use a therapy such as clomiphene citrate with intrauterine insemination. That's a scenario where we would have the woman take medication to try to improve their ovulation, or perhaps even make 2 eggs, monitor her carefully so that we can determine when she's ovulating, then take the semen sample, wash and prepare it, and put it up inside the uterus. With that technology, usually we would try for 3 to 4 months before going on to the next technology. I think the important thing to realize with modern technology, if couples are willing to use various types of techniques, various treatments, surgery, IVF, even possibly using donor gametes, either eggs or sperm, most couples we can help have another child or to increase their family.
So what are the limitations then?
Well, the limitations I think really get into more of an issue of time, and oftentimes the frustration if therapy doesn't work quickly. Cost can also be an issue, as many insurance companies don't cover some of these treatments, and that's a problem. But there's really no answers to any of those particular issues, and we all deal with that on a daily basis about decisions that we make and how to proceed.
Now, we know you've done a little bit of work with gender selection. Would you talk about that for just a minute?
I would be happy to. I have the opportunity to work with Dr. Ed Fugger, who's the primary scientific director for a program called Microsort. It is a new technology that is in clinical trial where we can take a semen sample, wash and prepare it, send it through a machine called a flow cytometer. And what that machine does is help us separate the X and the Y-bearing sperm, with X being the sperm that would form a female and Y, of course, being male. The technology has really developed to an exciting degree here. Usually we can get about 90% purity when we're doing an X sort. And so couples that have two sons, for instance, and would like to have a girl, they'd like to participate in the clinical trial and they're otherwise normal, we can do simple procedures such as intrauterine insemination when they're ovulating and usually give them an 18 to 20% chance of pregnancy with a 90% chance of having a daughter, which is very exciting technology for many people. In addition, from a scientific standpoint, this is very important for couples with genetic diseases. So this is technology that we're evaluating very carefully in our clinical trial, looking at both efficacy and safety, and I must admit it's very encouraging at this time.
We always like to leave our listeners with resources to turn to after our discussion. Do you have some suggestions?
With the internet, there are some very good websites. One would be sponsored by an organization called Resolve, and their website is resolve.org. There's also the American Society of Reproductive Medicine that have a very good website at asrm.org. Our own institute has what I believe is a very good website at givf.com. And for those interested in the new Microsort technology, the website is microsort.net. One other website, it's inciid.org. The toll-free number for Genetics and IVF Institute is 800-552-4363.
Okay, that's a lot to take a look at, and that would be very helpful.
Yeah,
that's wonderful. We hope we've been able to answer questions for the many parents who've been wondering about these kinds of problems. So a very special thank you to Dr. Keith Blauer for sharing his expertise with us today on secondary infertility. Our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of our book, Parents as Mentors. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. And tell us what station you're listening to. Since we're airing all over the world, it's always fun to know what station you're tuning in from. Parents as Mentors is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
To learn more about us and our book, Parents as Mentors, visit our website, http://i.am/parentsperspective. That's http://i.am/parentsperspective. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents Perspective. Our sound engineer is Damon Fisher. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.